Let me try that again. It is Veterans Day coming up this week, and we want to take a moment and thank those who have been a part of protecting our country and doing those things. If you are a veteran or have been married to a veteran or someone in your family is, could you please stand up? Just want to thank you. Now, with that in mind, I just want to say one of the most underrated skills in all of parenting I have now figured out and perfected is the skill of boring your child to tears. I have figured it out. You see, Macon is at the age where he always wants a playmate. He's always high energy. He's always running around. He stopped taking his naps. And basically, whenever Jen has him, he's just all over, hey, let's play a game, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. But I have figured out, because I am not as high energy and as fun and as interesting as Mommy, the last 2 days, I have gotten Macon to nap in the afternoons by simply boring him to tears. What do you want to do, Daddy? I don't know. What do you want to do? Let's play run around and jump and do tricks on the couch. How about we play sit here and contemplate the meaning of life? No, how about we do running? Okay, I'll watch you. You run around. By the way, here's your blankie. Also, I've dimmed the lights a little bit in the room. And I don't know where that soft music that's playing is coming from, son. The problem is, Jen is just too much fun. Not me. The most underrated skill in parenting, boring your kid. Actually, what I say is I'm teaching him to play on his own. That's what I am doing. Okay, I'll move on, but then, you know, it was fun. We are starting a new series this week. We're calling it Bible Firsts, and it's just a way for us to go through some different stories in the Bible in which we can find the first time something happened or something of that nature, because I believe that a lot of our life and where we are can often be found by looking at where we came from. And sometimes a simple series like this should let us get into some interesting things. And today I want to start out with what I call the first week. It's Genesis chapter 1. We're just going to start at the beginning. We're going to get into Bible firsts, and we're going to read it through, and we're going to see if we can glean some wisdom or some thoughts about the way the nature or the world is and the way God created it to be. Now, so last year, and I know I haven't talked about this in a while, but Jen and I bought our first home. And it was really, really neat. And we sort of, you know, got the chance to redecorate and do a lot of things the way we wanted to. Before this, we'd lived in a parsonage, so the church owned it. So anything we wanted to do had to get permission to do. but now, you know, we have our own house. And one of the things we finally did after talking about it for years was we upgraded our TV. Jen's laughing. Okay. Yeah, I know. That's like the important thing you do when you buy a house, right? You get a new big TV to go in. No, okay. But we were using one that Jen had had since college, and we got this new TV, and, you know, it's 4K and all of that, and I really wanted to see, you know, well, how much difference does it make? How good could this look? And so I got one of those 4K players, and I did some reading online, and I saw over there over and over again, that one of the best ways to show off a new TV was to get this nature documentary called Planet Earth 2. And I'm thinking, yeah, right. I was thinking like an action movie, like, you know, Batman or Spider-Man or something. But I went ahead and got this nature documentary and I put it on the TV. And let me just tell you, wow. They've really changed since I was a kid. They've got this technology, and it's like you're right there with a camera on an eagle's back, flying through the mountains, you know what I mean? Or you go underwater and watch these animals that you've never even seen before. Like the first episode takes you to some newly formed island in the Antarctic and you watch hundreds of thousands of penguins running around. And it's just absolutely amazing. You go to the rainforest and you see this almost invisible glass frog that's like the size of your thumbnail. I mean, it just blew me away. And I remember just being just fascinated by, mesmerized by how beautiful everything was. Even to realize that there were such remote places on our planet where a few people had ever touched. The earth was just so beautiful and mind-blowing. Life itself was so fascinating that watching it in a certain mindset could almost be an emotional experience. Certainly an eye-opening one, to see the beauty of the things around us. And when I go back and I read Genesis chapter 1 about the first week, I can't help but keep in mind that sort of feeling of seeing it for the first time, even though I've been living on this earth for 36 years now, realizing the beauty and the fascinating things that are out there. And in fact, the incredible power of our God. When you go back and you read Genesis chapter 1, you see that power portrayed over and over again, day after day. You see God forming all the little pieces of the earth and bringing them together in these incredible ways. And back before, all these things got messed up, like in Genesis 3, you see just this perfect garden, this earth God created. And if you allow it to, it'll blow you away as well. So if you want to open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1, I'd like to kind of read through some of this and make some observations as we go. So here we are in Genesis chapter 1. We'll just start at the beginning. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. This is before anything is created. There's sort of these waters and the Spirit of God hovering over it. And now he's about to begin working and forming it into brand new creation. Verse 3, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And he separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning on the first day. And day one begins with simply the distinction between light and dark. And we keep going. We get to verse 6. And God said, let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water. This is where we get oceans underneath and sky above. So God made the vault and separated the water and under the vault from the water above it. And it was so. And God called the vault sky, and there was evening and there was morning the second day. And the second day we get some separation between the waters and the sky. And he's starting to carve out this space for people. Verse 9, and God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear. And it was so. And God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was what? Good. That's important. We get down to verse 11. And then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it according to their various kinds. And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning the third day. Now let's pause for a second. We're 3 days in. We've got light from dark. We've got water from sky, and now the water gathered one portion and land come out and vegetation being born. And there's all these interesting things happening, and it's beautiful, and it's starting, and we're just 3 days in. A couple of things to point out. Number one, God is the start of all things. This is inescapable. Even scientifically, they'll spend a lot of time trying to break down to explain how the process of creation or the beginning of things could have ever happened without a first cause. And no one can really ever answer that question. And although there are a lot of assumptions you could make, the inescapable fact and the most important part of this is that God is the beginning of all things. He is that first cause, and without Him, none of this is possible. In the end, the question is less, how was it done, and more, who did it? And in so doing, you find out things about that creation. You find out who God is by looking at the things that He has created. At the most basic level, there was God, and everything else follows. You see His power. His power is awesome. He simply speaks it into existence. It's not a time-consuming process. It's not something that He does with His hands. It's not something that He has to go and get approval for. He simply says it, and it happens. And all this beauty is created and begun. And to this day, in our very souls, we sense that something is responsible for all of this majesty and all of this beauty. And something has to be the reason there is something. It's been talked about a long time, trying to understand the existence of God. And one of the conclusions we've often reached is that it seems to be built into human nature to believe in something bigger than us. If you look at all of societies across all of history, everywhere on earth, nearly 100% of them have, to some degree, to some extent, believed in something bigger than themselves. It's like it was written into human DNA. And instead of concluding that those most recent, actually very recent people, concluding that there is no God, and trying to justify it on a lot of assumptions, it's easier to assume that there must be something built within us to seek that which is greater than us, which causes us to believe that that something exists, wired into our DNA, by the very way we've been made. God is the start of all things. Number two, we see this recurring theme of God saying after each day, and it was good. I feel like that needs to be said, because that's something that we often miss out on. Sometimes we look at this world and we don't see it as terribly good. It doesn't feel that way, even in our bones. We often look at the world and it makes us sad. We watch the news, we see what's going on, and for some reason it feels so broken, and it is, and we'll find out why soon. But we know in our inner self that something is broken, that doesn't mean it's not good or that it's irredeemable. In our heart we know that it was created good and it will be good again. Honestly, this is Bible College 101. But it says, we talk about how creation is good and it will be restored again to be good once more. We are not trying to escape creation and to rise up as spirits in some floating heavenly body. But we are in fact trying to recreate the earth and rise up with our bodies to eternal life. Because creation is not evil and dark and something we are escaping, but a good thing God created that has been broken. It was actually a guy you probably heard of by the name of Plato. Not Plato, Plato. Plato is the source of a lot of thinking, where Plato taught that the body is the prison of the soul. And that at the end of life, we would escape from this prison of our bodies to appear in this ephemeral existence somewhere. And for some reason, Christians often mix that up. Because Jesus said that your body was made by God, and it will be resurrected, like out of the ground. and that the goodness of what He created has always remained and will be made good again. That our resurrection life, our heaven, should not look so much like clouds in the sky, but as Christ coming down with the new Jerusalem. This is Bible College 101. Because creation is good. And we are not to so much desire to escape it as we are to redeem it. Because that is where it all started. Most stories, they don't usually begin in the middle of conflict. A lot of stories, they always start with a relative peace, with a relative goodness before the conflict comes. And that is where creation was. Cinderella's family seemed to be getting along just fine before her parents died and left her with the wicked stepmother. And then all of the nonsense and the hardship happened. Tom Hanks was a perfectly okay FedEx delivery guy before he got stranded on that island for some reason. Okay? It was all going fine until something happened. I suppose, and I'm not really a Lord of the Rings guy, but I suppose Frodo Baggins could simply have been an ordinary hobbit and chosen not to take on the task of delivering that ring to that mountain with the weird eye. Meaning there was this sense of peace and goodness before something came and broken up, and by the end of this story, it would come back to good. So number one, it all begins with God. Number two, it was good. Creation was good. And we're not trying to escape it. We're trying to restore it. And number three, one of the things I notice is we aren't given a reason why God did all this creating. I wish we were. I really do. I remember one time I got called by the children's minister over to a class because they were bombarding him with really deep questions like, why did God create the world? And even I didn't really know exactly how to answer that. And the Bible doesn't say. I mean, we have guesses. We wonder if maybe it's like an artist who's showing in his creation his incredible beauty and his ability to do amazing things. Maybe it's like a parent who's overflowing with love and wants to pass it on to a child to have some sense of reciprocal joy and love in life because they're overflowing with something they want to give and pass on. Whatever the reason is, He is ultimately the author of it all, and it's His story to write. He can do it with a simple speaking of His word, and it happens. Bible first. This is where it starts. But let's keep going. We've only gotten through day three, by the way. There's a few days left. I don't remember how many are in a week, but we'll see when we get there. Verse 14. And God said, let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years, and let them be lights in the vault of the sky to give light on earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on earth and to govern the day and the night and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. So he creates basically the sun and the moon and the stars and sets them in their appropriate places, which also puts into place all the ways we measure time and holidays and celebrations and everything else. Verse 20, I believe. And God said, let the water teem with living creatures and let birds fly above the earth and across the vault of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living thing with which the waters teem and that moves about in it according to their kinds and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water in the seas and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning the fifth day. Now, not only do we have the vegetation, but we've got fish in the ocean and birds in the sky. Then we move on to day, what are we up to? Six. Actually, I'm going to read up here. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, the creatures that move along the ground, and the wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. And God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Hey, you guys are getting good at this. All right. And then verse 26. Now we have animals, but at the top of that, at the pinnacle of creation, here on day six, before all is said and done, he decides to create order by granting one thing, dominion. Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals and over all the creatures that move along the ground. And so God created mankind in his own, what's that word? Image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. And let's go a little bit further. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has breath of life in it, I will give every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw all that he had made, and it was what? Very good. Very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. Now let's pause for a moment, take a couple more observations. One thing I'd like to point out, one of the things we talk about a lot also in Bible college, but also I think in church, is the image of God, the Imago Dei, right? And he says that we created mankind in our image. And one of the things that is important about that moment is that that image is tied to purpose. This is something that I don't know that we talk about enough. But one of the ideas that seems to be prevalent in this section that was known to people of the time was the idea of a king who ruled in a certain place. And in order to designate what lands that king ruled, sometimes they would place an image of themselves, like a statue, in that land. And I would say that this land is jurisdiction of this king. And one of the images that they seem to be drawing from when they talk about the image of God is he talks about them having dominion and rule over creation. And he says that he placed his image in the people who were to rule over those things. And to some degree, we are the extension of God's authority in ruling on earth and in his creation. We are called to be the pinnacle of it, to reflect him the most, like a statue reflecting the image of its creator. And in some ways, we are passing along, or he has passed along, that authority to us, so that when we rule over creation, we are to do so with his graciousness, his kindness, his joy, and his wisdom. And so that image comes with a sense of purpose, that we are given a job. Even in perfection, we still have jobs. We are the crown, the imprint, and the hand-chosen ruler subject to an emperor above us. We should neither take advantage nor neglect that which we have been assigned. His image, after all, proves our worth. Now, we argue a lot about what, well, not really argue, but we talk about what the image of God means, and we equate it to a lot of things. Anything that separates us from the animals, whatever makes us more like God, the good things about humanity, our ability to love, our passion, our desire for art, the need to create, our abilities with language and thinking and philosophy and worship. All these things separate us and they make us part of that image of God, but it is certainly something which proves our worth and in fact is an element of His authority. That image is tied to purpose. We are to have a purpose as we've been put over this creation. The extension of Himself here on earth. The second observation I'll make is that the image is given equally to the male and the female. It doesn't distinguish. It doesn't say, and God created the man in His image, and then there was the female too. No, it says He created them in His image, male and female. And so we need to realize that the distinction of male and female goes all the way to the very beginning, but neither one reflects God more than the other. And because of that, we can say that not only are male and female equally given the image of God, but so is every person on the face of the earth. And one of the things we have to realize in any good discussion about where it all began, is that because every person reflects the image of God equally, that is the basic most fact of all morality. That I cannot treat another person badly who is made in the image of God the same way that I am. And this foundation for ethical behavior and treating one another well cannot really be found in any secular version. No one can answer the question, why should we treat others better or as well as we would treat ourselves or anyone else? Why are there moral and immoral things to do? And the image of God at its very core gives us that distinction in a way that no secular theory ever really has. It is because you are made in the image of God that I have a requirement to treat you as a person made in the image of God. It is because you reflect the glory of the God of the universe that I can treat you as no better or worse than myself. It is because you are made in the image of God that you have inherent value and must be treated with respect. And that image of God does not change based on your behavior. It doesn't change based on anything. Because that image of God is written into your DNA. So you have inherent value. I hear people say all the time something like, you got to earn my respect. And I'm sorry, but I disagree. My respect for you is written into your DNA. You cannot do anything to me that will cause me to lose that. You are made in the image of God, and that is inescapable. It's the basis of our morality. It's what makes us human beings. So yes, I think that image is tied to our purpose. I think that image is equally distributed among us, which becomes the core of our morality. Last but not least, what I want to point out is that at the end it says that when it was all completed and perfectly functioning, it was not just good, but what? Very good. I feel like that's worth pointing out. Because if we are searching for a goal in life, if there's something God has called us to do, if we are supposed to have authority to rule over these things, then apparently completeness, order, function, and the presence of people living in harmony with one another is what it means for things to go from good to very good. Somewhere along the way, it started to fall apart. We'll talk about this next week, about the first sin. But for now, we know that things were very good to begin with. And when we function in harmony, and when we fulfill our roles, and when we stop trying to escape our roles to pursue our own happiness in strange places, when we finally settle down and accept what God has given us to do, there becomes the very good world He created. The world is broken, but it is still good. And when it is restored, it will be very good again. When we live in harmony with God's design, we show glimpses of what very good might look like one day. To fulfill our functions, to know that the image of God is present in every person, and to live in order and function is to make it very good. Creation was made good. We are not here to escape it. We are here to be a part of God's ultimate task of restoring it. Now, I think we got through 6 days. If I'm not mistaken, there's one more. We're actually technically in chapter 2. Can you believe that? We read an entire chapter of the Bible in church today, and nobody got up and walked out. Well, that I remember anyway. Chapter 2. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. This has always been a little bit mysterious, right? I mean, for one, just from a logical sense, why does the God who creates everything with a simple word need to rest? And I think probably the answer is he doesn't. That was for us. There's something about this in which it models for us an important fact. That although our image of God is tied to our purpose, and we are to work to find peace and order in this world, we are also to reflect God in resting. And that rest, when we can get it and when it is appropriate, is good. It is a model for us, and it's a gift for us. The idea of the Sabbath was to honor and remember the Creator of the universe, and to know that even the functions He gives us come with His grace and mercy, to be able to rest from time to time. These are good things. It's part of the way that God created the world to work. Another thing is if you look at the writer of Hebrews, you'll see him use this idea of a day of rest and apply it eschatologically, which means essentially at the end of times. As in, all of us are looking for our one day of rest. We're on this journey traveling, and one day our work will be done and the day of rest will arrive. As in, one day we will have fulfilled our purpose on earth and we'll find our rest with Him. So don't quit now. You're almost there. Those ideas remind us that the seventh day is a gift given to us by God as part of the way we were created to function and work. We are to work. It's part of perfection, apparently. We are to rest as well. Sometimes that's hard, and I certainly am not an advocate that the only way to do it is to take Sunday and not do a thing. After all, I am up here working, by the way. But I do believe that we should, to the best of our ability, take the wisdom of God and the way we were created and try to find appropriate time to rest. It doesn't have to be Sunday. It doesn't have to be Monday. It doesn't really have to be any particular day. But it is how you were made to need that. So don't fight that. Don't despair so much of your need to make that money that you can't take even one day off. Or to advance in your career that you can't take one day off. Or to need to do so much all the time that you can't enjoy time with your family, which, by the way, was the main job you were given. So whatever you do, remember how you were created, what you were created for, and the fact that when it was created, it was very good. These are the things which I take from the first week. I'm sure there's more, and I'm sure we could talk about this for a lot longer if we wanted, but this is my overview. In the first week, we find out that God is incredibly powerful and creates the world by His image. He is the start of everything. We learn that He created the world good, and the creation is itself still at its heart good, though broken. We aren't given a reason why. We are told that we are made in the image of God. It's tied to our purpose. We're told that when everything is complete and in order and functioning in harmony, the way He designed it, it's very good. And we're told that we were created with the need to both work and rest. With that in mind, we get an idea of where it started. And from that, we can deduce where we are and where we're going. It started good. Now it's broken. And next we're going to where it's very good again. This is the story of human life on earth. And we're barely one chapter in. I've got a couple application points. This may be silly, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Take time this week to remind yourself that creation is good. We have a tendency to get a little dark and a little pessimistic in our world today, constantly bombarded by news and things happening. And so I'd say watch a documentary, go for a walk, or just watch your kids and grandkids play. Do whatever it is that you need to do to remind yourself that creation was made good. And at its heart, it's good but broken. And give yourself that ability to see the beauty in what God has done. Number two, and this really jumps to the New Testament application that Jesus gives, which is that because everyone's made in the image of God, we are to treat our enemies even as people made in the image of God. And even from our perspective, people whom Jesus died for, right? And so enemies become a huge part of what Jesus sort of brings out that the Pharisees and teachers of the law and the Israelites before him never seemed to understand. That because we are all made in the image of God, we're to treat our enemies as people also made in the image of God. And so wherever your hiccups are, whoever it is that you struggle with, remember to treat them as people who are also in the image of God. And number three, I want you to find purpose. We all need to find purpose in our work, but to rest wholeheartedly when we are able. Again, I don't think that, you know, if you miss one week, that it's the end of the world. And if it's not on Sunday, I don't think that's the end of the world, too. What I do think is important is that the principle of working and resting in pattern, in rhythm, is part of the way God designed us to work. And the wisdom that sets forth should be taken seriously. So go wholehearted at your work when it is the right kind of work. But also rest wholeheartedly when you have that chance. I think this is part of how we were made, and I'm going back to the very beginning to find it. Hey guys, this is just the beginning, but I hope you enjoyed our start of this series on Bible First, and I'm excited to see where we go next week. I'm thinking next week is probably the first sin, but we'll get to that when we get there. If you would, let's bow our heads and end in prayer. God in heaven, I thank you for a chance to look at your words. And I hope, God, that maybe people gleaned even more than I thought of, that they read these passages and reminded them of something in their lives. I pray that your Holy Spirit is active and working because it knows more than I do about every one of these sections, which it inspired to be written. So, Lord, work in our church, work in our lives, teach us to rest, teach us to see the value and image of God in every person, and teach us, Lord, to understand your incredible power and how you created this world and designated it good. God, help us, maybe above anything else, not to simply give up on this world, but to instead see it as something made good that's been broken and even bound by the evil and degradation around us. In that sense, let us be people of freedom who set people free. And let us be part of your work in restoring lives and families and homes. And God, because of all this, may you be glorified, because what you created is good, and you, and only you, have the power to make it good again. We thank you and love you. In your Son's name we pray. Amen.